across all time zones, covering both hemispheres. It's time for another installment of Authors First on the Artists First Radio Network. This is something we've been doing now for over 23 years. Close to 20,000 artists have appeared on this network, and we're here to help independent bands and authors. And folks, if you need some help, contact us. Drop us an email to dj@artistfirst.com. We are here to help. We are having a return guest tonight. She has become quite the prolific author. A very interesting lady. I'm glad she's coming back. It has a great new book that we're going to be talking about. In fact, as you guys heard, we deliberately played the Big Cat Rescue commercial before this broadcast because that's one of the things that we are proud to be helping the Big Cat Rescue folks down there in Florida. We'd like to advertise Tippi Hedren's, also her. This is a separate Big Cat Rescue Foundation that she has. The Bichon Dog Rescue, on and on. That Basset Hound Rescue out of St. Louis. The Stark County and Mahoney County Animal Shelters, just to mention a few. And I think our guest, no, I don't think, I know definitely, that our guest has a soft spot in her heart for all types of pets. It's my pleasure to welcome back Pamela Fullen. Hi, Pamela.
Hi there. Thank you for having me.
That's a pleasure. You're one of the good ones, Pamela. We need more folks like you in the world.
Oh, thank you.
Well, I have spent an hour with Pamela before. This is not her first appearance. It's her second. So I know a lot about Pamela. But many of our listeners are going to be hearing about our guest for the very first time, Pamela. So let's do a little backtracking at first before we get into your new writings. You grew up in Texas. Do you still live there?
I do, yes. I grew up in Plano, Texas, and I now live in Dallas, Texas, so just about 10 miles south of where I grew up.
Now, you graduated with a degree in biology, partially because you were an animal lover, and then spent some years in I was reading about a pet hotel. I didn't even know they had such things, but obviously you've been a big animal lover. What is a pet hotel?
A pet hotel is a fancy place where people can drop off their dogs and cats and other exotic animals for the company to watch in a boarding resort facility and take care of them while the parents are out of town or even just for the day. And I was the dog trainer there. I helped teach the daycare staff how to watch and make all the dogs in the room get along. I was certified to teach pet first aid and CPR classes so that not only the resort staff but also clients would know how to help sick and injured pets, which is very, very close to my heart because I grew up in a house full of animals and I was still wanting to help every stray dog and cat and injured bird that I found ever since I was a little child.
Yeah, you and me both, Pamela, we're cut from the same cloth. My mom got quite tight. Well, she's also an animal lover, but yeah, I would bring home everything. I have four cats and, they bring me things all the time, alive. They don't kill what they catch. They bring it home, and I have a pet door that lets them in and out, so they come and go as they please. And I don't know, last week we had a bat. They brought in a bat, which I rescued.
Oh, no.
I rescued. Cute little thing. Flying squirrels. I didn't even know we had flying squirrels in Ohio. They brought one home.
I didn't either.
rabbit. I had to look that one up because they have a lot of extra skin underneath their bodies. It's kind of like, you know, it shouldn't be there. But then when you look it up, that's what the flap is. Anyway. Okay, I'm digressing here. But what was the first pet that you can remember having?
Well, we had family pets, a dog and a cat all my life. The first pet that was actually mine was a guinea pig named Gus that I got for my 8th birthday, and he was specifically my pet, and my parents were wonderful at teaching me how to be responsible and take care of him and a compassionate pet. owner right from the very first day with Gus, but that was the first pet that was actually mine.
I got to interject this. I had a couple of guinea pigs. I don't even know where I got them. They were big. They grew. I mean, they grew up. You'd think they were groundhogs half the time. And in the summer, no, it's the other way around. During the school year, I would let the biology teacher at the local high school have them. And she would keep them in a very spacious cage and let the kids teach them about them all school year long. And then on the last day of school, she'd put them in a cat carrier or something and bring them over to my home. And I would take care of them all summer. And when she would come, you know, come by, we'd be out on my back deck. I would just go out into the yard and open the cat carrier. And they're escaping. I'm like, don't worry. They're not going anywhere. And they would live outside in my backyard unattended the entire summer.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, they're herbivores, so they just grazed like sheep. Oh, they got big. You know, they ate all day. And then she'd come in the fall, and I'd go round them up, put them back in the cat carrier, and she'd take – we did that about 3 years. And the the last summer, a stray cat came into the yard and killed them.
Aw.
Yeah, but they had a wonderful life. If you know, they just – and my yard wasn't even fenced in. Anyway, that
– Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I know. You know, it's just it, – they just – did their thing. They I don't know. I guess why didn't they run away? I have no idea, but they didn't. Anyway.
They knew they had it good. I've heard of rabbits living outside and in a backyard, but never guinea pigs.
Yeah, we have lots of rabbits up here as well. My neighbor was out washing his car a couple of years ago, and he yells, "Hey, Z-Man, there's an iguana in your backyard." Now, we live in Ohio. This is not tropical climate here. And I'm like, nah. He said, "Your iguana," because at the time I had an iguana. And he said, "Your iguana is out, and it's in your backyard." And I went in the house, and the iguana's in the cage. I said, "No, it's not." And lo and behold, there was a giant iguana in my backyard, which we caught, and it was missing its tail, but it grew back. My iguana in the home had a cellmate for the rest of his life. Well, when I got divorced, my wife wanted the lizards, so I don't know. There was a certain compatibility there, so I let her take them. But okay, I'm digressing here. I'm going to start some fights. And folks, you can send hate mail if you'd like to dj@artistfirst.com. But what do you like better, dogs or cats?
I can't say I have a preference. If it's an animal and it's a pet, or it's an injured animal that's wild, I absolutely love them all. I would adopt everyone from the shelter if I could, which is why I cannot work at an animal shelter.
Yeah, I find it very difficult to go into an animal shelter because I want to take them all home.
Yep, that's what I say. One day when I have unlimited funds, I'm starting a shelter where everybody can just come and live and be happy for the pets so that there's no more caged animals at the shelters.
Listeners, get your animals spayed and neutered. They're wonderful, but we have way too many of them that can't find homes. Can you imagine? I always wanted to be a veterinarian until I realized they euthanize animals. I couldn't do that. I could not do that.
I was seriously considering being a veterinarian and was encouraged by multiple people to be a veterinarian when I was in high school. But I, one summer working for a vet, and I loved taking care of the animals, but the surgeries by the end of summer, I could not even stand in the surgery. It just absolutely bothered me. That's why I love writing the Megan's World series, because in some ways, she's my alter ego, but she's also able to do things that I wasn't able to do because she's got an interest in becoming a vet herself, and she's able to stand in the surgery room and not feel sick to her stomach after getting used to it.
Well,
it's been a lot of fun.
We love veterinarians. They've saved my animals on more than one occasion. I had a cat poisoned. He saved it. They do wonderful, wonderful, wonderful work. But okay, so here you are, a pet lover your whole life so far. And how do we get into writing? What's the jump between enjoying pets to writing about them?
I've been writing in some capacity, short stories or journaling or keeping a diary almost my entire life. And it really started out the creativity of wanting to write books started when I had the experience of finding an abandoned litter of kittens that were one day old, and I found them over 6 years ago, and I still have all four babies. They're now adult cats because I was absolutely so in love with them after bobble raising them for 8 weeks, and I knew it was a once-in-a-lifetime experience to get to bobble raise and be as close to a mother as these kittens knew. So I kept a journal and a diary of their growth and development while I was bobble raising them. Of course, while I was bobble raising them, I didn't have energy to do anything creative as far as beyond keeping their journal up to date, because I was getting up every 4 hours throughout the night to feed them. But once they got to be a couple of years old, I really started toying with the idea of, okay, this would make an awesome book series, an awesome way to teach young readers about pet care and responsibility and what it really takes through the ultimate example to be a good pet owner. And so I had that outline kind of started for Megan's Munchkins, which was my first book in the Megan's World series that came out a little over 2 years ago. But it wasn't until my Shih Tzu, Sunny, that I had for over 9 years, passed away in 2015, that I really took to turning out the book and really working on the book, throwing my heart and soul into that writing Megan's Munchkins, because I found it therapeutic. I found it like almost grief. It was a grief counseling or grief therapy for me. And so that's when I really, really started diving into developing the Megan's World series and working towards getting that out and published.
Well, they say write what you know and advice towards authors, and you certainly know animals. Folks, there's some great videos. Go to Pamela's website. It's hername.com, Pamela Foland, FOLAND.com, or use the links provided on Artists First. And there's some great videos of Pamela bottle feeding kittens. Boy, that brings back memories, man. I'll tell you what. Yeah, that is. I even have one of those little bottles like that, although I think it's been used to death in some ways. But that, boy, I go back and look at pictures now. My youngest cat, I think, is 9, and that's a long time ago. But, boy, that's excellent. Now, you began writing with, was it the Sunny the Wonder Dog book? Was that the first book you wrote?
No, Megan's Munchkins was the first book I wrote. Sunny the Wonder Dog is the picture book series that started last summer, but that is based upon my real-life dog that passed away in 2015 that actually led me to starting writing and really starting this journey of becoming a published author. And that was another a great experience of being Sunny's owner, because I called him a human in a furry body because he was so intelligent. He was so in tune with my emotions and with what I was thinking. And he actually has his own website. We still have it up. It's sunnythewonderdog.com, because across his life, I was the dog trainer at the pet boarding facilities, the pet hotels, and he was my demo dog for all of my training classes. He was, you know, the one that I would use to show the clients how to do when we did event days at different local venues to bring publicity and new clients to the resort. I would have Sunny there, and it was at the request of one of my training directors that she said, teach him to read. Teach him something different that people haven't seen before. So you can see videos of how I taught him to read and what I mean by reading, because I had two different index cards in my hand, one in each hand, and he would sit in front of me, and like at first I taught him his name, and so one card would say Sunny, and the other card was just a dummy trying to trick him card, and I would say, what's your name? And he would paw touch the card that said Sunny across it. So across several years, I was able to teach him words, numbers, shapes, colors, and even physics equations. And we were on Good Morning Texas in 2011, promoting his reading and the pet hotel that we worked for at the time. And I say our claim to fame with him is that the host of Good Morning Texas asked us at the end of our interview and at the end of his reading demonstration to pick the 2011 Super Bowl winners, because we were on about 2 weeks before the Super Bowl. And so, of course, you know, Sonny really didn't know what I was saying when I held up these two new cards and gave him this new question, but I should have placed a big bet on it, because he predicted the Super Bowl winner that year. Really? And so, anyway, my Sonny, the Wonder Dog picture books, the first book is Sonny from Outer Space, is a creative way I found to explain Sonny's intelligence. He has to be an alien from outer space in disguise. So Sonny from Outer Space is exactly that. He comes to Earth disguised as Sonny the Shih Tzu, and he meets 7-year-old Pamela and her two other dogs, little Westies, and he has to learn how to acclimate to what he thinks is very, very strange Earth customs of doggies having to go potty outside and be on leash outside and eat dry kibble from a food dish that's on the floor. And he's not allowed to say anything other than wolf. So he has to learn how to acclimate and fit in as a dog on Earth in Sunny from Outer Space.
So folks, you can find that book. You can find the links to the Sunny the Wonder Dog website and all that information at Pamela's website, PamelaFoland.com. Sometimes when I sit with my cats out of the deck, I've often thought, gee, now I get so much joy from being around my animals. In fact, literally, this is no exaggeration, I spend far more time with non-human beings than human beings, and I do that by choice.
Absolutely.
And I often wonder, sometimes, I mean, I get so much joy and companionship from my animals that I kind of wonder if they weren't heaven-sent to kind of watch over us humans here. And I got this kind of funny notion in my head that maybe these cats were sent here to keep an eye on me. And so I ask them, you know, what did you do to get this punishment? You know, what did you do in a previous life that you were reincarnated to have to come live with me? You know, I wish they could... Tell me
that. I don't know that that's a punishment, because all my friends tell me they want, in their next life they want to come back as one of my pets, because my pets are so spoiled rotten.
Yes, me too. Most of my cats live to be past 20. I just lost one last summer. I guess it's been over a year ago now, who was 22 years old. And I know people are going to giggle when I say this, but when animal lovers like us, Pamela, when we lose a pet, it might as well be a fellow human being. It is literally a family member.
It is, completely.
Folks, I mean, I have a pet cemetery in my side yard with headstones, the whole nine yards, because they live their whole lives on my property, and they will remain here.
Exactly.
I don't want to get too crazy about that, but... Yeah,
we're both going to start tearing up if you continue.
I don't need to do that, but there was a discovery made by the British, and you being having a scientific mind, you might be aware of this. A number of years ago, using the same scientific methods that discovered, I don't know, vaccinations and astronomy, the British figured out, at first with dogs, that if you're a pet owner, and you leave your home, and the pet is at home, whether you're gone for an hour, a month, or 10 years, that dog knows when you are heading home. Have you heard of that study?
I have, yes.
So, folks, I'm sure many of you out there have not, but they know this to be a fact. Again, using the same scientific methods that bring all scientific breakthroughs, they have discovered the same thing is true with cats. So I ask you, listeners, this is rhetorical, what the heck's going on there? You know, Sonny was able to read flashcards, and that's a fact. And animals have a connection that we can't explain. We have no idea what's going on there. We know we can see that it's happening. But, Pamela, would you like to offer an explanation of how dogs know that?
I really don't have an explanation. I mean, is there other theories that I've heard on that particular scientific study is that because they have such a higher level of hearing than us, that they're actually able to know the car motor and be able to trace it for further away than where we could only hear it if it's in the driveway, that they're able to hear it when it's several blocks to further away. But I really don't know. It has to be some sort of, I don't know, almost a sixth sense or something, because I know when I've left my dog, my current dog, and Sonny over at my parents' house, he was so smart that when I would call and text them to say, okay, I'm on my way, Sonny would know, and he'd be sitting at the back door before I even called. He would be waiting for me. So it's like they could read the clock and understand when I tell them, okay, I'll be home at 5, they're already looking at their watches or something.
Yeah, I hope they figure that out someday, because it validates what many of us pet lovers already know, that animals are very smart. They're not just objects. Now, while we were talking here, Mo, there are two rescue cats that live here at the radio station. A buddy of mine and I were out mountain biking, and we were actually had to, you have to go about a mile along the highway on this particular trail we were riding on, and we looked down near a guardrail, and there are these two teeny tiny kittens just sitting by the guardrail. Out in the middle, and someone threw them away, threw them out of the car window, they threw them out of the window, but there they are in the middle of nowhere, waiting for to be eaten by hawks. And we picked them up, and that's Mia and Mo, and they are, well, they got to be 7, 8 years old now, and they live like queens here at the station.
Oh, that's so good.
Now, it's a huge difference to me. You kept all of the four kittens, right? You said you kept those?
Yes, I did.
So you have a family of siblings.
Yes.
I've also had a cat who had kittens, kept them all, had all of them. There's a huge difference to me when you have a family of cats. Now, not just cats that were thrown together because one came from here and another one came from over there, but these two kittens here, they're grown cats. They play here at the station. They groom each other. They sleep head on each other's tummy. You know, they are as close today as they were the day we picked them up. Have you noticed that, the difference when you own when you have a family that's really a bloodline family?
Absolutely. They are definitely linked together, and they know that they're siblings. They play together differently. They sleep together. I tease them that the only time that it's every cat for themselves is when I pull out the carrier to take them to the vet, because then those four separate like shrapnel. They're like, okay, that's the carrier. It's every guy for himself. And I have a cat that was 18 months old when I found and started bottle raising the four kittens. And he is definitely Papa Cat, because all four of those kittens show him the respect. He is the alpha in the house as far as between the five cats, and they still to this day will, the four kittens will bow their heads and come up to my other cat. And it's just so sweet to watch that dynamic between not only the kittens, but then the older cat that I have with them as well.
Well, I'm sorry, I stepped on you. Please continue.
Oh, that's okay. I was going to say the personalities and quirks and their different antics really is, true to life in is what I put in Megan's journal, because the four kittens that Megan's raised are have the same names as my four babies here. And So in Megan's journal, Kitten Growth and Development, my new book, it is really explained. She really is writing about each of their little personalities, because you think coming from the same litter, the same bloodlines, the same DNA, that they would be similar, but they're just like people. Siblings are completely different, and all four of these cats are absolutely completely different, and that's something that Megan is really learning about and finding out and writing about in the journal, my new book.
Well, what number is this? Is it 1, 2, 3? Is this book number 7 in the Megan series?
Well, this is not actually a book per se in the Megan series. It's more of a companion book for the Megan's World series, because it covers the kitten's life from the time Megan finds them in book 1 all the way through when they get neutered and spayed in book 5, Megan's Challenge. So it covers the first 6 months of their life, but it's Megan's detailed journal diary where she's not only writing about what she's doing to raise them, but she's doing the computer research of, okay, to teach herself pet care. Okay, I need to know how to litter box train them. I need to know how to bottle raise and take care of these little babies. I need to know what vaccine reactions are and what litter to use and all that type of stuff. There's actually true-to-life nonfiction research in the book, Megan's Journal, as well as Megan's writing about extra kitten antics that the cats will do as they grow and develop, as well as Megan's deeper insight into who the character of Megan is, because she's, you know, writing about how terrible she feels when she first finds the kittens, and she's lying to her parents about it and hiding them. And, you know, then she's writing about how close she is to her brother and Kevin, and how much she appreciates her best friend and how much she admires the local veterinarian. So you really get much more of an insight into who the character of Megan is and inside of her world and her head in this Megan's Journal, Kitten Growth and Development. But it is also summarizing the stories from books 1 through 5 of the Megan's World series.
And tell us about Megan. She's a middle school kid?
Yes. In Megan's Munchkin, she is 13 years old and in 7th grade. And then in book 4, she turns 14 years old, and she then starts 8th grade in 6, Megan's first crush.
Folks, if you're just joining us, that's author Pamela Foland. She has, and she's discussing her, actually her latest companion book, Megan's Journal. It actually comes out in about 5.5 hours. Right?
It's actually out, it officially comes out in 5.5 hours, but it's actually live on Amazon.com right now. And there's a link on my website, PamelaFoland.com, to take you directly there.
Well, excellent. And we know many of you will go there. And, you know, folks, if you're listening to this as an archive, all those links are there. The book's just been out for a while, so it's not going to be taken down today. That's the whole purpose of these broadcasts, is to keep these programs archived and in podcast form so people can listen to them for years to come. Megan has to learn all the difficult things that pet owners have to learn. Too many people buy a pet, you know, like when you see somebody get chickens or one of the chicks for or little rabbits for Easter. You just want to, I don't know, say bad words, because you know that 3 weeks later those pets are forgotten. Then, you know, the fad of the holidays gone, and those pets live lonely lives in cages forever. Anyway, I'm editorializing here. Sorry, folks. I've also rescued rabbits too, by the way, that were in such situations like that. If you think rabbits are defenseless, you're sadly mistaken. You pick up a rabbit that does not want to be picked up, you're going to need medical attention shortly.
Yes.
As you well know. But I think those are so important lessons. Now, is your reading audience also middle school kids? Is that who you're trying to reach with your books?
Right. The books are written, Megan's World books are written for ages 8 to 13 years old. I've had advanced readers as young as 7 be able to read the book by themselves because the primary people that buy the books from me at the local book signing events that I do are mostly grandparents and aunts and uncles. I also have developed quite a repertoire of parents that will read with a child that's just learning to read, kind of go back and forth reading the book with their child. And also, lots of these grandparents are very, very much pet lovers, and they like that the books are so easy and quick to read. So I have lots of pet-loving adults that read the books as well.
Excellent. What is a minimum age you think a child should be before their family gets them a pet, whether it's a dog or a cat? Is there a minimum age?
Well, that is a great question because I have been doing talks on that very subject to the local Rotary Clubs and Lions Clubs this summer because I've developed this presentation that titled Five Skills That Pets Can Teach Children. And the five skills that I talk about are responsibility, patience, trust, compassion, and self-esteem. And this is based on my true growing up experience. These are five wonderful skills that my parents instilled in me by using pets as my teaching tool and as my motivation to want to learn them, because the biggest thing that I emphasize in this speech is that you can start teaching a child of any age the correct way to approach a pet, and with the wide range of tasks that pets need on a daily basis, feeding, brushing, changing the water dish, letting them outside to go potty, and just playing with and loving on them. Parents have the ability to choose a task that is age-appropriate for any level of child. But the biggest thing that parents have to understand is that the ultimate responsibility and care of that pet is going to fall on the parent's shoulders, not the child. Because the parents that think that little Johnny's going to take care of the pet 100% by himself when they get that puppy or that kitten for him are the poor pets that you see in the shelter a few months later, didn't have time for them, or child got bored of them, or whatever. And that's exactly how I was raised. I mean, even with my first guinea pig, Gus, I was talking about earlier, what my mom started me doing is I would hold Gus, and I would watch her clean the cage every afternoon. It was the first thing that we did when I got home from school. But my mom instilled responsibility in me because I was not allowed to do anything else until Gus was taken care of. So I would hold and play with him while mom cleaned out the cage and then helped her refill his dish and change his water bottle. And that was all I was doing at 8 years old. That was the level of responsibility that my parents knew I could handle. And it was something positive. And, of course, the pet is a great joy for an adult and especially a child. And then, of course, Gus lived for over 4 years. By the end of his life, I was able to complete, being a 12-year-old by that point, I was able to complete the full cage change and taking care of him every day. But, again, my mom had to remind me 99% of the days, but I had taken up that next step to more responsibility because I was completing the full process. And these skills that I talk about and that I'm trying to instill in young readers through the Megan's World book series are skills that you use in everyday life. And that responsibility has stuck with me because to this day, the first thing I do when I get home, whether it's been an hour or all day, is I take care of the pet. I don't do anything else. So So it definitely was taught well to me, and it's definitely something that I'm still using as an adult.
Well, folks, the book that's coming out, the official release is just a few hours away, Megan's Journal, Kitten Growth and Development. If you have middle school age kids or younger and you have cats or you're considering getting a cat, this would be a great book, a great way to teach those things, because there is a developmental process with animals. You know, the shelters are full of animals that didn't develop right because the humans were too stupid to understand how to raise them. I don't mean to be blunt. But just like there are bad parents in the world, there are bad pet owners. And would you agree with me, Pamela, that not everybody should be a pet owner?
Oh, absolutely. And the cool thing about the Megan's Journal book is I have included pictures of my kittens at each stage that Megan is talking about. There are true photographs of my kittens at every stage to really show, especially the young readers, how completely helpless these one-day-old kittens are. They are 3 inches long. Their ears are folded over. Their eyes are closed. They really can't do much more than crawl around on their stomachs, kind of like little inchworms. And then, you know, you see them develop all throughout that book. So they're, you know, the six-month-old cats is where the journal ends. But it's really, really fascinating because along with those pictures, Megan is also telling the readers through her journal entries of, okay, now they're able to track a toy across the room because they're 4 weeks old. And now they're 5 weeks old and they're starting to wrestle with each other and really get excited to, you know, climb the cat tree and do different things. So there's definitely lots of cute developmental things that readers may not be aware of because, like I said, bottle raising an abandoned litter of kittens, I consider it a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Do you let your cats go outside?
I don't, no.
I just, I'm sitting here while we're talking. I just picked a flea off my arm. We have property here at the station outside, and these cats do go outside, and they bring things home like a flea. Roger, Mosling, right on the table in front of me as I speak. In fact, I have my notes about you laying on her stomach. She's sound asleep.
No. Living in Dallas, Texas, now, busy city.
Yeah.
The houses are close together, and because the city has grown up so much, we have wildlife. We have possums and bobcats that are, you know, not that far away, and I just couldn't stand for anything to happen to the kitties, so I keep them 100% indoors.
Yeah, and, you know, as much as the wildlife, I worry about other people. There are people who hate cats and hate animals altogether and do dastardly things to them. Let's not go there. That just ruins my day.
Right. Well, and the cars and the traffic. Around Dallas.
Yes.
I'm not sure where you are, too.
Yes.
Cats don't know how to look both ways before they cross the street.
Yeah, and just drive down any road in Ohio, and you'll find, not cats and dogs, but, you know, cripe, about every mile you'll see an animal that was struck, usually a possum or a raccoon or a squirrel or skunk, you know, it's like...
Rabbits.
Yeah, rabbits, yeah. Exactly. Or a deer. There's lots of deer around here. Anyway.
Oh, no.
There used to be a mink farm where this guy had thousands of minks, and the animal rights people snuck in one time and let them all out. So
for
many years, there was minks all over the place around here. But, you know, what reminded me of that, you'd see many of them got hit by cars because they didn't know any better. But your book has 30 photographs in it. That's nice. Although that's a challenge in the printing area, isn't it? Doesn't that back in the days when I was involved in the printing business, that kind of it's much easier to put out a book that's text than it is photos. Did that create any unique challenges for you when you were putting out this book?
Well, I had my dad help me format it because he's a computer wizard. He's been a computer programmer his entire life. And so he was very, very fast and very good at formatting it in a way that I never could have gotten it to print, because, yes, text, for me, text is very, very easy and much simpler to format and upload, and the pictures really threw a wrinkle into the thing. So I was very glad that my dad really helped me format it completely.
Well, they have to be proud of you that you've turned out so well, and you're such a grand example for others who, with your kindness and caring for animals, lead on. That's a wonderful example you're showing.
Thank you.
Folks, if you're just joining us, Pamela Fulland is back with us. There's an interview you can check out. She was on with us about a year ago. Is that right? I think it was in the spring of 2018. Of course, that interview's up there, too. And you can listen to all of the interviews of all the authors on our website. And Pamela's latest book, which is just coming out literally, is in the Megan's World series, is Megan's Journal, a companion book, and it's Kitten Growth and Development. And go to the website and see. So I watched a YouTube video of you bottle feeding one of the kittens. Oh, man, that is so cool.
Yes. And I really came up with doing this companion book for the Megan's World series because as I've been doing book signings and talking to more and more of my fans and my readers across the last 2 years, they got that question a lot of, well, how did Megan know what to do? How did she know at 13 years old what to do to bottle raise these kittens? So it's a question I've gotten a number of times, and it kind of put the seed in my head to start thinking, okay, well, I'm talking about her keeping the journal, especially in Megan's Munchkins, where she's bottle raising the kittens. And I thought, okay, that would be really, really a cool way of answering the questions that my readers have been posing to me of, how did Megan know? Well, now this book hopefully will answer that question, because it shows not only Megan's journal entries, but the nonfiction research that she was doing on her computer to learn how to bottle raise the kittens, how to mix up the powdered formula correctly, how to teach them to go potty in the litter box and to eat out of a cat dish. And she also, you know, it also delves deeper into her relationship with the local veterinarian, Dr. Newton, because she truly respects and admires him and uses it and follows his advice to the letter. So that was how I really started the idea of doing Megan's Journal, and I was so glad I kept the journal from bottle raising my own kittens 6 years ago, because at the time I thought, oh, I'll remember this. Well, if I hadn't wrote it down, I would not have remembered all the little details of how just minorly the amount that you were feeding them changes on a daily basis.
How do you know when it's time to wean them from the bottle?
Well, the advice that my vet gave me is the same advice that I had Dr. Newton give Megan in the book. What he had me do was start mixing in straight pureed baby beef, human grade baby beef food, baby food that was beef flavored, into the bottle 3 weeks old to get them that used consistency of the meat protein, get their stomachs to start digesting a little bit more complex food. And then everything, if you look up on the internet or in a book on cat development, it will tell you that the mother cat starts pushing them out of the nesting box or out of their bed about 4 to 5 weeks old to start making them not go potty on the bed. So the mother cat will start teaching them that, and then the mother cat will also stop nursing them as frequently around that same time, so that they are usually fully weaned by 6, 7, 8 weeks old. And so that was kind of the basis for what I did as well, of seeing that, okay, yes, they are starting to go potty on their own without having, because you have, literally, if the mama cat was there on a newborn kitten and up to 4 weeks old, you have to use a wet paper towel or a wet cloth to stimulate them to go potty, because the mother cat will lick their bottom to make them go potty. They don't really go on their own. They need that physical stimulation to know to go potty after each meal. And so I was trying to mimic in every way what the kittens, where the kittens would be had the mother cat been raising them. So at 4 weeks old, I started seeing that they can go, but that litter box needs to be right there because it's kind of, they stop and squat wherever they are.
Yes, and, they do.
Yeah.
That's often one of the biggest challenges for cat owners, is getting them to become acclimated to a litter box. I've got a cat showed up in my home, in my garage. Oh, cripe, it's probably been 6 or 7 years ago. A beautiful, long-haired calico. Gorgeous thing. Absolutely traumatized. Wouldn't let me come near it, so I built it a heated shelter with in the heated garage, and it remained out there all winter. It had been declawed, which should be illegal, by the way. Declawing a cat should be illegal. That's don't get me started there. But why I'm mentioning this is she's got to be 12 years old now, and she does not use the litter box. Yes, yes. Think about this. A 12-year-old cat that's this big has, I don't know if it was never trained to use the litter box or whoever, whatever home she was staying in before she was kicked out. You know, did an owner get fed up and kicked her out? I don't know. And intelligence levels of cats or any pet are, you know, not all cats are of the same intelligence, just like not all people are of the same intelligence. You know, maybe she's a little on the slightly, she's gorgeous, but she might be a little on the retarded side. I don't know.
Well, they do make cat litters that have the cat attract, like a pheromone in the cat litter that would attract them to make them want to go potty, which is something that pheromone-coated litter is something that I use in training my kittens to go, because it did. When I changed them from the newspaper to the clay clumping litter at once they were old enough and not putting everything in their mouths to handle the clay litter, they would spend so much time sniffing and digging in that litter, and then they would eventually go potty in it. I would try getting one of those pheromone litter, Cat-A-Track litters for her, and putting it in a very low-lying, big, uncovered litter pan and seeing what happens.
It is. I'll try anything. I love this cat, and it's going to live here at my home for the rest of its life, her life. But
and
boy,
if she, I don't know if she's going out in the grass or if she's going on the concrete where in your garage, but if you can find one of her potty messes, pick it up with a paper towel if it's urine, soak it up, or if it's poop, pick it up and put it in the litter box, because cats and dogs both all go by scent.
Yep.
If they smell they've gone someplace before, they're going to do it again and again and again. So if you can put one of her messes that's outside the litter box into this cat attract pheromone coated litter, it's really going to start her in using the litter pan.
Well, like I say, it's worth a try. I have a pet door built into my home that the cats can go, and so do the raccoons. I figured that out. The raccoons come in all the time until they get to be adults and they can't fit through the pet door anymore. I don't know, maybe 20 raccoons over the years I have live trapped and taken out to the reservoir, out to the where they should be living, not in the city, and let them go in a wonderful area. You know, it's tens of square miles of wooded area that they can live the rest of their lives. But, you know, that's illegal in the state of Ohio. I'm admitting to a crime. You're not allowed to catch raccoons and re-release them. They must be destroyed. But I don't pay any attention to that. Let them try to catch me. Yeah, I remember one time Pamela, I got one as an adult raccoon. I got it in my live trap, and I'm on my way. It's like 2 o'clock in the morning, and I, because that's when they're out, you know. And I got it. It's in the back of my van, and I'm on going down the main drag in our town on the way out to the reservoir. Let go of it, and I look back, and the door is open, and the raccoon is no longer in the cage.
Oh no!
Swear to God. And I'm weaving down the road. I got my feet up. Is it gonna bite me in the back of the leg? I'm like, ah, you know, what the hell? And, you know, so I'm like, oh my God, nobody's gonna believe this. And you know, it was every bit as frightened to me as I was of it at that moment. And it all went well. I finally got out to the reservoir. I just opened the door to the van and stood back, and it violently just jumped out and ran off to its happy home. But
oh, gosh. Oh, wow.
I had raccoons come in the house as recently as last summer, and they'll just jump up on the couch. The babies will, and they'll eat anything. They're very hungry. Anyway, they're so cute, but you can't keep them, folks. I've gone to the vet. Little tidbit. You can never know if a wild raccoon is carrying rabies. It may not manifest that for many, many, many years. And there is no test. Raccoons are great pets, but you need to get them from a bona fide dealer who can attest to the fact that they are free of disease. What's the strangest pet that you've ever had, Pamela? Well, besides a guinea pig and cats and dogs.
Oh, gosh. I've had pet rabbits. I've had pet hamsters. And I last summer, I started writing about betta fish in one of the future Megan's World books. And started really researching, you know, all the characters. The betta fish are also known as Japanese fighting fish. So these fish cannot be in bowl or in a tank with multiple bettas because they fight each other. And but they have beautiful, long, colorful fins and tails. They're absolutely were fascinating to me. So as I was writing this book, and trying to explain how Megan was caring for the betta fish that she was pet sitting for, I was doing research because I had a fish tank, but I never had had a betta fish. So anyway, last summer I got a fish tank and I got a betta fish. And I am so glad I did because I could not have written about the betta fish and done it justice had I done it from just the research and the internet. Because even these little teeny fish have their own personalities, their own likes and dislikes. One of the interesting things that betta fish do is you put this mirror that is on a circular ball bobber that floats on the water, like hanging off of a bobber, and you put that in for the betta fish. For exercise, because they will literally curl out their gills that's under their chin and go up to the mirror and kind of fight their own reflection.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like mental stimulation for them, so you can't leave the mirror ball in there very long. But I had my first betta fish absolutely love the mirror ball, and my latest betta fish is terrified of it. Runs and goes in his boat, cut and hides when I put it in the tank. So, even at the little fish level, they each have their own personalities and their own unique likes and dislikes. And now, that's what one of the pets I own currently. One of my favorite, well, it was favorite because it was unique, and I love pet sitting for the different birds that I have pet sat for when I was at the pet hotels and working as a dog trainer in them. But I don't think I could ever actually own a bird. But I absolutely love the African gray parrot that we pet sat for a number of years at the one pet hotel where I worked. He mimicked his owner's voice so well and had such a personality, and this bird is actually the inspiration for the bird character of Taffy that is in Megan's Pet Sitting Adventure Book 2, because all the little phrases that this bird that I pet sat for would do. I mean, he loved the lady that owned him. But you try and reach your hand in the cage to change his food and water dish, he'd bite you. And he had a wicked sense of humor because he would mimic his owner's voice saying, be sweet, and then he would say, then he would mimic the owner saying, ouch, because he bit her. but then he would do this little evil laugh after he said, ouch, and it was so comical. So I had to put that bird in my pet sitting adventure, Pet Sitting Adventure Book 2, as Taffy, the African gray parrot, because that's one of my all-time favorite, just because it was such a unique bird and such a cool experience, even if I was getting bit twice a day.
Some of those birds can live very long lives.
Yes.
I don't know about that particular species you're talking about, but, you know, some of those... buddy of mine owns a pet shop, and he says some of those birds can live 40, 50, 60 years.
Oh, yes. They live a long time, and when they get going on their talking or their whistling or their calling, there's no off switch. And it can be deafening sometimes, depending on the room that they're in.
That's a commitment. When you're a pet owner and you have one of those birds and you know, well, if you get one late in life, it's going to be at your funeral because it's going
to
outlive you.
You've got to leave it to somebody and have somebody know how to take care of it.
And you just got to understand that stuff, folks, before you don't jump in without doing the research like Pamela has done. We are rapidly running out of time for the hour. In fact, we have we got just a couple moments left. Pamela, again, tell everybody where's the best place, first of all, they should go to get your books and what formats are they available in?
The easiest way is to go to my website, PamelaFoland.com. It will have a whole book page where you can see all of the books that I currently have out. It will have direct links to take you to that Amazon page to purchase any of the books that you'd like. The Megan's World books 1-6, which is Megan's Munchkin, Megan's Pet Sitting Adventure, Megan's Pet Whisperer, Megan's Birthday, Megan's Challenge, and Megan's First Crush are available in paperback and on Kindle, the e-readers. Now, the Sunny from Outer Space and the Megan's Journal are only available in paperback.
Folks, if you're big animal lovers, like Pamela and I are here, this would be a great series of books for your children. What a great way to teach them the responsibility of being a quality pet owner so that you get all the joy from a pet and the pet gets all the joy back from you. Too many animals live horribly miserable lives because their pet owners just aren't informed or they don't care, but we're going to remain positive. And folks, how can you not care about a kitten? Oh, my God.
I say I have never met a kitten or a puppy that I didn't like.
Now, what did you name the your four kittens?
Misty is the only girl, and then the other three are boys, Gizmo, Petey, and Chip.
Well, Pamela, it is a joy having you on every time you come back. This is your second appearance, and you're welcome as you continue on with the book series, the Megan's World series that you have now and the companion book, Megan's Journal. What's next on your creative horizon?
Well, later this fall, I'm going to have a picture book version come out that is telling the story for the 3 to 7-year-old readers of what Megan did to rescue the kittens. It's going to be titled Megan Saves the Kittens. And it's going to be a picture book, so it's going to be under a 2,000 words description of what Megan did to bottle raise these kittens and to save them. So I'm really, really excited about that. And next spring and summer, I'm going to have the second book in my Sunny the Wonder Dog series series is going to come out, and that book is titled Sunny's Talents, where 7-year-old Pamela and her family are discovering that, okay, this Sunny dog, he's much smarter than he's letting on, because they catch him reading the newspaper, and he's able to help Pamela with homework, and so it's going to be a lot of fun to keep that series going. And then I'm also going to have a seventh book, Megan's the Rescue. It's going to be my seventh book in the Megan's World series that will come out next year, where Megan gets to work with a local cat rescue through Dr. Newton, the veterinarian, and learn more about what goes on at a rescue.
Pamela, you're one of the good ones. We need more people like Pamela in the world. Folks, you can be like Pamela. You can rescue a pet. You can take care of a helpless animal that needs a good home, or help others. Buy this series of books. Pass them out to your kids and your neighbors, and maybe a school teacher that could read them to the kids. It's a great way to get a great message out that needs to be said. You know, as Pamela and I, we're softies. We'll take in any animal. And what we need to do is have more animals taken care of and not have Pamela and I running around the world trying to save all the rest of the critters out there. But,
yep, because I'm going to need a bigger house at some point.
Yes. Well, you're a good one. Now you know how Noah felt.
Exactly.
Hey, we got an animal shelter around here called Noah's Ark somewhere. I think it's owned by Dr. Niehaus. Anyway, well, Pamela, we've gone a couple minutes over. I hope we didn't screw up your schedule or keeping you from another meeting that you might have tonight. But thank you again for spending time with us and our listeners. And please come back when your next book is ready. If you're a joy to talk to, and you're an inspiration for all of us pet owners out there. And we'd certainly love to help spread the word.
I'll definitely come back when my next book series is out. Thank you so much for having me.
You have an open invitation here. Keep up the good work, Pamela. And folks, rescue an animal. Do something nice. The joy that you will get back from them is hard to describe. Pamela, again, thank you so much for your time tonight, and we look forward to having you back when your next project's ready to go.
Okay, thank you.